Oh, hell yeah. Brother, welcome to WrestleMania, the podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me is my fellow Undertaker.
Chat Mets.
Welcome, brother, to the WrestleMania that will run wild on Hollywood. That's right, folks. It is now officially WrestleMania season. And as I do my best Duffman impersonation, we talk this evening about the WrestleMania. The WrestleMania that is not just one night, it's two nights. And the WrestleMania that will take place in LA. And the WWE would like you to think that this is the first and only time Los Angeles has ever hosted WrestleMania. In fact, it will be the third such time they have hosted WrestleMania. They were, fun fact, a part of the only WrestleMania to air and be contested in three separate cities. So, Chad, your thoughts, your feelings, your emotions, when you scroll through Peacock and notice a picture of the Staples Center as the logo for the WrestleMania 23.
Actually, I hadn't been in Peacock, so I didn't know that was what was going on.
They changed it this week. Like, as of last week, it was still the picture of from the WrestleMania logo with the star and all the things. And I guess they didn't want confusion with this year's WrestleMania, which is also in LA, which also has a star logo, which also talks about Hollywood. So it's just a picture of the Staples Center.
I mean, I get it just for, just for that. Because, like, when they first started really hyping, like, after the Rumble, when they really started hyping up Mania again, you know, that's when they started doing those movie parody vignettes, which is something they did from the last time they were at Mania. And I didn't remember the sign from that Mania, but it's very similar to this one.
Yeah, the graphics package is very similar down to the marquee.
Yeah, so I'd have to think that it's...
Yeah, I'd be willing to bet. I think the actual theme for that WrestleMania was WrestleMania Goes Hollywood.
I think it is. I think it was the exact same thing. So with that in mind, I don't begrudge them changing the logo on Peacock because... Yeah, it's going to cause a bunch of confusion. But, you know, if everything was good the last time, run with it again. And I mean, it works. It still works. I like the whole like movie cinema, movie poster thing, names on marquee with the wrestlers above them, that whole package thing they've been doing. And I don't remember they did it for the last one, but it feels like it would be similar. So, you know, if it worked before, it's been enough time, run with it again. I don't progress to that.
It packages our two favorite loves, wrestling and movies.
Yes, yeah. It really does. Cause I noticed it specifically with the Cody and Roman one, where they showed the poster of Roman, the poster of Cody, and then they kind of fly through all these other posters and they put the other one up. So once I noticed that one, I just kind of watch all of them, and I just kind of enjoy seeing how they characterize these different wrestlers and what kind of movie poster thing they're aping and all that. So yeah, it is definitely a collision of worlds that I love, and I appreciate them for it.
Yeah, and you know, this will be what, the fourth WrestleMania in the state of California, or the fifth? Because if LA has three, Anaheim has one, and Santa Clara has one.
I think that's it.
Yeah, because I can't think of another place in California that's hosted the event. But that's got to be a record for the state, because even New York has only hosted it three or four times.
The whole thing with New York is tricky because, again, you can put it in April. That doesn't mean it ain't gonna be balls cold in April.
Well, no, I'm trying to remember because technically, They did shows at Madison Square Garden 1, 10, and 20. So that's three. And then I know that they did shows at Atlantic City, because they did like 2 years at Trump's properties in Atlantic City.
Yeah, that was like WrestleMania 3, one of those.
No, three is Pontiac Silverdome in Michigan. Because that
it was what? It's between two, three, and four. So if you're saying that was three, then no, but it couldn't have been two. I don't know.
It's the one where I know for sure one of them is when Macho Man has the big reunion with Miss Elizabeth.
Let's see. I just want it in a list, man.
Because that's part of the whole thing where people were like surprised that Vince and Trump knew each other or like did anything. And I'm like, well, you know, multiple WrestleManias were held at Trump properties over the course of the first 20 years of the event. So
okay, so the two Trump ones are WrestleMania 4. It's 4 and 5. They both were in Atlantic City. They were both, well, they say they were at Trump Tower, but, and I only know this because I listened to a podcast that was talking about Vince and Trump like 2 days ago. They said they were at Trump Tower, but they were actually in the city convention hall because that could accommodate WrestleMania. Trump's place couldn't, but he was heavily involved with it. And I think that's how they first got to know each other. So it's 4 and 5. That are
and then didn't and then they Jersey. Did the one in Vegas at the Caesars.
Vegas. How far down is Vegas?
WrestleMania 9, I want to say.
WrestleMania 9. Oh, it's Paradise. So yeah, that's the Caesars.
Yeah.
The I guess that's technically not Vegas. That's why I didn't see it the first.
Yeah, that's
but, yeah, that's Vegas.
That's the Giant Gonzalez match for Taker. And also, it was one of the first outdoor WrestleManias.
Yeah, they can have that. Let's see. We got in New York City, we have 1, 2, 3, 3.
So 3 in New York and 3 in New Jersey because you want to, because the WrestleMania 29 was in East Rutherford, New Jersey. So the 2 Atlantic City ones and the East Rutherford one. So
I think that's right. I think I saw New Jersey again.
Yep. Yeah. So. 3 New York, 3 New Jersey, and this will be 5 for California.
4 in Florida. New Jersey. They went to East Rutherford twice, 29 and 35.
That's right. I forgot about 35. Yeah. So that would be, so California, Jersey, New York, Florida, I guess, would be the other major hub. Because you have the WrestleMania, 2 WrestleManias in Orlando, right?
I think Texas is going to be the next one.
Texas, you have 25 and we'll 17. 17 and 25.
25, yeah. And then you have Arlington and then 32.
The two Dallas ones.
Yep, and 38. So there's 4 in Texas. Basically, Dallas and Houston splits between them. New Orleans is in there like 2 or 3 times.
Twice. WrestleMania 30 and 34. WrestleMania 30 and WrestleMania 34.
Yep. Those are the most. Florida would be.
You have the 2 in Orlando. It's at Camping World Stadium.
So that's 24. And
24 and 33, and then you have the Miami for WrestleMania 28, mm-hmm. and you have Tampa for WrestleMania 37 or 38. So
37.
Yeah.
Wait, is that Florida? I think. Oh, and then we got the, the Thunderdome era WrestleMania, which is in Orlando.
Right. So that would be, so 5 for California, 3 apiece for New York, 4 for New Jersey, 3 for New York. 4 for Texas and 4 for Florida.
Uh-huh. Actually, there's 5 for New York because WrestleMania 2 is in Uniondale, is one of the spots. Uniondale, New York.
That was one of the crazier things that I feels like Vince did a bunch of cocaine one night and was like, this will be a great idea. Let's split up Mania across 3 different cities.
Like everything I know about him now and how like obsessed he is in Gorilla. I can't imagine him thinking, yeah, let me give up running this big, the biggest show I'm going to do. Somebody else is going to have to run 2 of these.
The sequel to the greatest show I've ever done.
Right. He was on something then.
The ironic part is that it would be easier to do now than ever.
Yeah, but they know. I mean,
no.
They could, because I think we're for here and forever, we're stuck with two nights of WrestleMania. So technically, you could, but I know they have the resources for it. But I'm just thinking of the massive amount of setup that goes into these stadiums, and then
it's a week setup.
So that's two crews setting up a week setup for two different places, and then I think if they did it, you'd have to do it in a way that the card is announced so far in advance that people know which one they want to go to, because like this one, for instance, I mean, we know Cody and Roman are the main event of the entire thing. They're the last one going on. But if I wanted to see Sammy and the Usos, like right now, as I understand it, it's going to be on the same night as Cody and Roman. I don't think it should be. I think it should main event the first night. But if I go with the assumption that they put it on the same night and then come to find out, no, they're going to be on the first night, which is somewhere else, I really want to see that one. So I think because of stuff like that, outside of the logistics of a week-long setup, they will never do it, but the capability to do it, it is easier now.
Well, the thing is, now it's such an event that so many things are built around. When it was in the early stages, in the first 10, or even the first 20, really, if you want to go down to it, like, yeah, you had the Access, which is just basically a giant gift shop, but like, you didn't have the Hall of Fame ceremony. You didn't have NXT show. You didn't have Raw the next. You still had Raw the next night, but it wasn't a big marquee, you know, biggest Raw of the year type thing like it is now. You didn't have the combination Raw, SmackDown, and Hall of Fame ceremony like you have now. So, you know, they. Just a whole lot of other things you have built around the event now. Other promotions such as Ring of Honor, right. such as AEW or New Japan or Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, all of which would run shows. WrestleCon itself, which is located in the same city as WrestleMania, mm-hmm. just at a different venue. You know, is a huge deal. So you couldn't really get away with the splitting it off thing the way you once could.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because it's not just WWE, but yeah, WrestleMania weekend has now become like a life, like everything around wrestling thrives on WrestleMania weekend, because they can all just plant flags in the same city as WrestleMania. And all of your big wrestling fans are there, and they're going to spend money, and they're going to go to all these shows. Like when I went to 25 when it was out here, I think that's the only time I've gone to a Ring of Honor show. I saw somebody almost die jumping off a ladder through some tables, and I want to say there's barbed wire. I remember there being a lot of blood, and I was really, really close to all this stuff. And I would have never gone to that show if I hadn't gone to WrestleMania. And lots of everything wrestling thrives in the place of WrestleMania is. So I know WWE doesn't really care about anybody else. They care about themselves, but it behooves everybody for them to stay in one spot and not try to stretch thin.
Well, it's the Super Bowl of wrestling,
right?
You know, it's the San Diego Comic-Con of the WWE calendar. Like, it is the thing that, it is a giant ass celebration of this thing that we all love.
Right.
And it's, you know, when the Super Bowl happens, it's a bunch of people who love football gathering in a place, not only because their team's playing the game, maybe not, but to celebrate the fact that this is football and this is the ceremonial end of the football season, because, you know, the college season ended 3 weeks before, but now this will be the last true competitive football we see till August. So let's all gather in this place and have a big party and celebrate our love of football. And with Comic-Con, it's let's all gather around, get dressed up, and let's go meet some of the most famous people in the world and hear about some new projects that are coming out. And let's all celebrate the fact that we're nerds and that we love this stuff. And let's interact and get to know each other and have a good time. That's what this week is about, much less that particular event that night. It is about reminding ourselves why we fell in love with this stuff in the first place. Put aside the politics of it and the backstage altercations and the you know, sexual harassment payments and the hush money payments and the acquisition of the sale and potential sale and all of this stuff. Put all that to the side. It's an opportunity for us to reflect and to remember why we fell in love with this stuff in the first place, why we were randomly flipping through channels one Monday night and stumbled across Raw and just got hooked, or Nitro and got hooked. It's about remembering where you were when Rock and Austin fought at WrestleMania 17 and where you were when the heel turn happened. It's about, you know, Shawn versus Razor Ramon with a ladder in Madison Square Garden a decade into this thing, just changing the game. It's where you were when Austin was bleeding profusely from his head, refusing to quit to Bret Hart, and turning both of them in the same night at that moment, forever changing the game for both men. It's about Edge spearing Jeff Hardy all while Jeff from the top of a ladder to the bottom of the ring in a tables, ladders, and chairs match in the Astrodome. It's Hulk Hogan suplexing Andre the Giant. It's Goldust and Roddy Piper, you know, reenacting the O.J. Simpson freeway chase in a backlot brawl in Anaheim.
About that, man.
In a backlot brawl in Anaheim. It's about The Undertaker and his streak. It's about Big Show and his failures at WrestleMania. It's about, you know, championships and memories and moments. Famously, Brock tells the story all the time about John Laurinaitis coming to him the night before WrestleMania 19 and telling Brock this was going to be his moment. He needed to make the most of it. And apparently Laurinaitis talked Brock into the spot where he did the shooting star press that nearly killed him in Angle.
Man, I thought that dude died.
Yeah. So like, it's about moments, that WrestleMania moment that lives with us forever, that makes us randomly turn this stuff back on for this time every year. And I look forward to it. I can't wait for it. This will be almost, let's see. So I started with 15. We're now at almost 40. So yeah, over 20. 15 to 35 is 20. We're almost to 40. So this will be coming up on my 25th WrestleMania. You know, it's something that matters. And I'm glad that we all get to have this experience and commune, whether the show is any good or not.
And I'll say this for him. The show's typically, no matter how I felt about the build or the potential card that we get, I typically leave WrestleMania feeling like I got a good show. I enjoy myself while we're there, and I feel hopeful for what's coming after that. Now, in years past, like the next night, all those good feelings are squashed because there was an old man that ran it and just wanted to spike the things that I liked. But I don't think we'll get that this time, especially with the big main event angles. Because they're playing the long game with some of these things that might carry over into next year or something.
Or at the very least till SummerSlam. That was always my thing. And if you go back and you watch some of these stuff because it's on Peacock, you can notice that there were times when the guy who went at Mania held it until SummerSlam and then things changed. So like you ran programs in seasons. Mm-hmm. And over the course of 3 or 4 months, it wasn't like over the course of 2 weeks. It was planned out and everything played out over the course of a 4 month stretch. You know, I just want people to think about this for a moment. Triple H, the game, the, you know, the cerebral assassin, that dude at WrestleMania 15 in March of 2000, in March of 1999, was a mid-card wrestler. And by SummerSlam 1999, that dude was main eventing with Mankind and The Rock, with Jesse Ventura as the special guest referee. Like, that's how quickly you can build somebody, you know? So,
like, him, I distinctly remember that era. That was like my high school era. And I, when they were elevating Triple H to the main event, I couldn't take it seriously because I was like, this guy is like, he's not on this level. He quickly proved that he belonged on this level, but it took a while for me to transition to it. But yeah, when you put it in those terms, it really was in the span of a little over a year that that kind of thing happened. And as we've gone on, we've seen less and less of that. But like, the last person that I felt that way about was probably JBL. When he became, you know, the business tycoon, I remember painted on a tattoo, Acolyte JBL. I'm like, I can't believe this guy's going to be this. And, you know,
JBL was a part of a 6-man tag against the Right to Censor at WrestleMania 17. And by WrestleMania 21, he was main eventing with John Cena.
Yep. Yep. I'm like, he's good for a good laugh. He'll lariat you to hell, but I mean, that's all he is. But then he became, you know, now he's a Hall of Famer. So it can
happen. My favorite of those is Billy Gunn. Billy Gunn's part of the greatest tag team in the one of the greatest tag teams in the history of the WWE and the New Age Outlaws. But there was a period of time in the spring and summer of 1999 where Vince thought this dude might be a main eventer. And so, do you know who the 1999 King of the Ring is? The 1999 King of the Ring is Billy Gunn.
I remember.
In a match where he beat his friend Sean Waltman, aka the 1-2-3 Kid, aka X-Pac, to win, and then went on. His reward was a match with The Rock.
Oh, the guy, I remember that.
The guy went from a tag team championship match at WrestleMania 15 to the main event, one of the main events of SummerSlam, in just that quick.
Right. Yeah, I do remember that. Like, you have to say it, but once you see it, I'm like, oh yeah, I do remember Billy Gunn was King of the Ring, because that's the summer he feuded with The Rock, and that's the summer that The Rock cut that promo on Sunday Night Heat. And it was like one of those string of promos that The Rock did that it's like, those like touchstone ones. And that one was the Billy Talks to God promo. I'll always remember that one.
Well, you know, God has played a very prominent role in the history of WWE, including having an 0-1 match, an 0-1 record against Vince McMahon.
Man, do you realize the size of your ego that you're going to have? I mean, you're going to go over on God. You're going to bring God down, and you're going to make sure you go over on him, because even God can't come in to your promotion and get one over. You always got to have it over everybody. Think about that. That's the kind of dude we're talking about.
Yeah, I just always found it hilarious that Sean was perfectly okay with this booking. Like, you know, God's going to be your tag team partner and you're going to take the L.
So ridiculous, man.
It is. So let's talk about the ridiculousness that we're supposed to get this weekend. And for those of you who are listening, our current plan, and plans can always change, but our current plan as of now is to do this as a preview show that we'll post before WrestleMania, like hopefully before the Hall of Fame ceremony on Friday. And then we will convene and do a recap of night one on Saturday that we'll hopefully post on Sunday morning. And then we will do a Sunday night recap for night two. And that'll hopefully post on Monday or Tuesday of next week. So, fun times as we depart from our movie bit for a little while and, you know, not talk about the fact that Jonathan Majors issued his own 5-finger punch of doom to get himself in trouble. But we'll get to all of that in due time. But let's go over this card and talk about the craziness that is WrestleMania 39.
All right. So we're going to go this card. is not going to be in match order because we still don't know what the match order is.
Well, we do. We do know the first match of Saturday night is Theory and Scene.
Yes, we do know that one, and we know that we know what the main event is. Anything else? I don't think they've officially said. They may have, by Friday. We'll probably know. They may have said on Monday night. Because I know last year, some matches it said will be on Saturday, some will be on Sunday, like when they were running the promos on Raw. But I don't remember that from last night. So I'm just going to go with this match order that I have listed in front of me. But yes, we know Cena's first, Roman's last, but we'll go with this. So the first match on this list is Raquel Rodriguez and Liv Morgan versus Shotzi and Natalya versus Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler versus the new team of Chelsea Green and what's her name? I'm drawing a blank and I know her, the former GM. What is her name? It's Sonya Deville. So that's where we're starting. The women's fatal four-way showcase, as they're calling it.
Yeah, because you just dropped off the face of the planet for a good 2 minutes.
See, on my end, you did dropped off for 2 minutes. So
we're doing the women's showcase match.
Right.
These are matches that are solely for the benefit of putting people on the WrestleMania card so that they can get WrestleMania bonuses.
Ooh, wait, and in that vein, I will be remiss to say that the Andre the Giant Battle Royal is on SmackDown this year to get all the dudes. They won't be on the actual WrestleMania card, but they're part of WrestleMania weekend. We can talk about that if you want. I don't really care.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really a thing that does anything for anybody. There are better ways in my mind to honor the legacy of Andre the Giant on WrestleMania weekend than to have a tournament that is going to be won by some mid-card jobber who's not going to do anything ever in his life with it. The only thing
of note is that Bobby Lashley is in there. He was supposed to face Bray Wyatt. Something's going on with Bray Wyatt, but Lashley's in that match. So,
yeah, they're saying that he's sick, that he has some kind of illness. I don't know if he has COVID or what he has, but like my thought was they were going to replace Bray Wyatt with LA Knight because they really like LA Knight and they wanted to get LA Knight on the card. Yeah. And Lashley's been saying he didn't care who it was. He was going to wreak havoc on WrestleMania. So I think it would be hard for them to get Bob to sign on to just being like, yeah, I'll just throw some guys around in the ring for 5 minutes and call it a WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah.
So, but WrestleMania bonuses are a very real thing. And Trips, for the most part, had run a really tight ship with the kind of match, the number of matches he wanted to have on both nights. And so they were getting really tight, and then they realized they didn't have, there were a lot of people who were going to be left out. And so that's why you get these kinds of matches.
Mm-hmm.
You know where I'm going with this. I'm going to want my girl to win. It's not even going to be close. I would have sold my house in order to do a Liv Morgan meet and greet.
I mean, I'm looking at this list. I mean, you would think that Ronda and Shayna would be the ones to get it. And maybe they are because we have these women's tag titles. We need to defend them. We need challengers. So no matter who comes out, Becky and Lita are going to have the title. So Ronda and Shayna versus Becky and Lita at the next pay-per-view, you know, could work. So if that's what the way they want to go, then they're the ones that should win. But I don't have a problem with Liv getting a win here. I also wouldn't have a problem if Raquel just decided to destroy everybody after losing and turn heel. Because if Bianca does retain her title, she needs challengers and she probably needs to lose. So you want to build somebody up at the same point. So there's a lot of ways I think it can go, but I think the most obvious is going to be Ronda and Shayna getting a W here.
Shayna finally getting her WrestleMania moment a couple of years after her WrestleMania moment was botched. you know, and you know that they do have a soft spot for Ronda, and Ronda is a huge name and moves a lot of merch, and so it would make sense for them to put her on the marquee and get her going. It just, it feels very much to me like, I don't know if it's the injury that Ronda has or what, but I kind of get the feeling that they didn't really know what to do with her up until about a month ago. And so they're like, well, we can throw this tag team thing together and this will work. At least it'll get her on the show. Like, that's never a great place to start from a creative standpoint.
From the things that I've heard and now where I've gotten this from, is mostly from like Wrestling Observer, but it seemed like the plan for a while was it for Ronda and Shayna to get the tag titles and have a match at WrestleMania. I know that was they kept saying that was a plan up until Becky and Lita getting the titles. And even once they got the titles, it still seemed like the plan was for Ronda and Shayna to take it from them. So I don't know what changed between then and now. I think I got an idea, but I'll get to that when we get to the damage control match. But if I still think they should be in the mix, because you need women's tag teams to keep those championships alive. So they are a good, dependable, worthy duo to at least contend for, if not win, the titles very soon.
Yeah, and I think that would have been the smart way to go. I just think that in the intervening time, they had the idea of getting the Legends involved, and they don't have a ton of Legends on this card. And so to squeeze Lita and Becky and Trish in there was just an easier way to go, and was going to move the needle, I think, a little bit more than the Shayna and Ronda bit, because Ronda has not been as hot on this second run, and no one ever gets over for Baszler. So, we'll see. But like, I think that this has the potential to be a good match. I don't think a long match. I'm rooting for Liv, but you're right, probably going in the direction of Baszler and Rousey.
Okay, so next up we have the newest of the matches announced, the Mysterio match, Rey versus Dominic, which Dominic, the man with the most heat in the whole entire company right now.
I think they put Dominic over and Rey puts his son over and walks to the back and says, I'm done.
I don't know about him saying he's done. That would fit.
As a wrestler, not necessarily as a producer or a manager, but like, or a booker, but not as an active wrestler. And just to have your last match be at a WrestleMania, to put your son over so he can start his career, I mean, it all just pretty much writes itself, and it keeps the heat on your son, you know, as being part of the biggest faction going right now.
I agree with that too. I think not only does Judgment Day need the win, I think Dominic, Rey is not served by beating Dominic outside of the satisfaction of the fans, but fans can't be satisfied through the whole thing. You've got to keep them heated up for stuff, and Dominic coming out with the win, I think that's where this is going. This would be a story, but in for Rey, put your son over, just went in the Hall of Fame, wrap everything up. But he can still go. And I'll do like that. They can still go. I don't know. They just want to walk away until they normally stay too late instead of getting out too early. So I don't know.
You mean too late as in flying over to Saudi Arabia and having a tag team match against the Brothers of Destruction for a whole bunch of money?
I mean, that's a different kind of too late. That's a, I can't believe they offered me this much money to do this, but okay, fine. The two layers talking about is like, their body is like, nah, bro, we can't do this no more. But they're still out there limping around trying to do it, especially with Ray style. Like when that happens, it's going to be like, if he lets it happen, it's going to be a sad sight. But those kind of dudes that can still go, their body's still letting them do it. They still want to go. But I do hope he walks away sooner than later, for so we don't have to see broken down Rey Mysterio trying to put stuff together. So I think this will be a good time. It's just a matter of how does he really feel about it.
All right, what's next?
All right,
besides Stacey Keebler's legs in the Hall of Fame.
So the next one on this list is the Usos versus Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens for the Undisputed Tag Team Championships. And for my money, this will be the main event of night one.
So before we talk about KO Zemania, as it is being promoted on t-shirts, do you know who's inducting her? Because my first thought is Tori Wilson, because they both came from WCW together and they did Playboy they share a common background. So
I actually don't know.
Like, I couldn't think of, like, Ray being inducted by the Mansa, like, makes, or the Muta or whatever, that makes sense. Like, they have a Lucha background and they both have history. But, you know, but, like, Stacy Keebler, to my mind, David Flair, the Dudleys, those are the other two names that really come to mind. David's passed away and the Dudleys don't exactly seem to fit. So the only other person I could think of would be Tori, or, you know, they could ask George Clooney and that would probably help the ratings.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't think that's gonna, that was my first thought. Cause when I think of her, I think of George Clooney, but I don't think
I'm just the opposite. I think of her and I think of David Flair, because her breakout angle in WCW was as David Flair's girlfriend. And that's how she got her start. And then she moved over to WWE. She was one of the 8 original WCW kit guys who were in the skybox for McMahon versus McMahon at WrestleMania 17. So she was on board with going to the E from the get-go. Her run in WWE is mainly remembered for the She Got Legs, Kid Rock video. And her time with the Dudleys, where she was a Trish Stratus like manager for them. So those are the two biggest angles I can think of for her for WWE. So it just, to me, it makes total sense because they came from WCW together. They've been friends for a really long time and they both took similar paths away from wrestling into marriage, into faith, and into family.
So for the record, Stacey Keebler did not pose for Playboy. She wanted to pose for Playboy, and she got talked out of it.
Well, that was in that run where Vince was letting them do it.
Right. Well, China
did it. China did it. Sable did it. Tori Wilson did it. Candice Michelle did it. Maria Knowles did it.
There's one more.
Sable, China, Tori Wilson, Candice Michelle, Maria Knowles. Who am I missing?
Well, you said it the first time. You didn't say it this time. Christy Hemme and Ashley Massaro.
Ashley Massaro. That's right. That's the one. She's passed away, hasn't she?
So see.
But I mean, that makes sense, right? For it to be Tori.
I think so. And there's nobody else I can think of. Yes, she did pass away. Almost 3 years ago. No, almost 4 years ago. Damn.
All right. So I think as we get back to talking about KO Zayn-a-mania, I think that this is going to be fun. Kevin Owens always brings his A game for WrestleMania. He's had really great matches at every WrestleMania he's been a part of. The energy for this match is going to be sky high. The foreshadowing of doom has already started for the Bloodline. The Bloodline has already lost his first match on television in his career on the main roster. So the downfall has already begun, and the booking here is really interesting because to me, I'm in the camp with you. I am of the mind that, and I've said this for over a year, that the night that the Usos lose the tag titles is the night that Roman loses his belt. That they would do both of those and that one would harbor the other coming. The bloodline would dissolve. Is it more interesting to do it the night before, where now it calls into question, well, is Roman going to win or is Roman going to lose? Because the bloodline now is been taken out by Sami Zayn. So, or the Usos have been taken out by Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. So what does that mean for Roman? You know, is it better to do it the night before or the same night? Because a lot happens in a 3.5-4 hours in between that first match and that last match.
Yeah, I can see that way of looking at it. Like the fall of Roman all happens at once. Like his soldiers lose and he loses all at once. I can see wanting to do it that way, but I mean, Sammy is still, if not the hottest, maybe the second hottest babyface you have going right now. A lot of people thought Roman should have lost the title to him in Montreal because of how hot he was. I think with all those factors, I think his popularity and the willingness and people wanting to see him, I think that justifies having that happen on the Saturday night. And you just on Sunday, you just have the Sunday, you can draw it out more. You can have the backstage shots of Roman being disappointed in the Usos and how do the Usos react to that. It gives you more time to breathe with it instead of it being like an immediate thing. It can be like a foreboding thing over the whole night leading up to the main event, because you will have had a whole day to process the loss of the Usos tag titles and what that means for Roman. But if you're going to have them lose and then have them interfere and probably toss Roman the title, I can see why you want to do it on the first thing. So there's, you know, it's like everything, it's pros and cons to anything, but I would have Sammy be in the main event of the first night.
And I can see that. I can see it. I think it's more impactful if it shakes his psyche by seeing his cousins lose and his cousins have to go back and face him and his wrath the same night, and what that does to both parties' emotions and mental state on what will be the biggest night of their careers, quote unquote. I like that angle. I also think that there might. So you may think that I'm crazy outside of the fact that I'm cheering the fact that my Legions of Marvel get to come home one by one. I think it's somebody else other than Sammy or the bloodline who cost Roman the championship.
Okay. I'm curious, but I'll ask the question when we get to that match.
All right. Who's next?
All right. Next, we have another one of the let's get more people on the card match. The Street Profits versus Alpha Academy versus the Viking Raiders versus Ricochet and Braun Strowman. Is this
the night that the Street Profits finally break apart?
I don't know. They've been talking about wanting to push Taz for a long time and breaking the Street Profits apart. But it's not just that. I mean, I like the Street Profits and I like them together, but Angelo Dawkins has, like, I liked him before. I saw more of him before when people were just like, you know, Taz is the breakout star. Dawkins has put in a whole lot of work. Like this last year, he lost some weight. He's added some more moves to his repertoire. I think Dawkins is a lot more of a solid guy that people give him credit for. And I think that might, because of that, that might be what's keeping them together longer than anything else. But I really just see this match as, you know, a way to get these guys showcased. I really don't.
It's literally in the title of the match.
Yeah, it's just a showcase. And it's
literally,
Like they had that match yesterday on Raw where it was basically, you know, the heels versus the faces. So the Street Profits and Braun and Ricochet versus Alpha Academy and the Raiders. And that was a fun match, but it was, you know, it kind of made diminish what I thought from this match, because they did a whole lot of spots that they can't do now because they did it on Monday. So a little bit of the sheen of this match is off because they did that for me. But I think when this match is going to come down to what really is going to happen in this match is the Alpha Academy is going to break apart. And because I'm 90% sure that's what's happening, I don't think we get two breakups from the same match.
Would make sense. I mean, isn't it about time for Otis to actually try again?
I like the concept of Otis.
You mean Otis, who is the number one subscriber on the Mandy Rose fan site?
Yeah, that guy. but like him going to the Maximum Male Models, that juices the Maximum Male Models, but I think it'll ultimately be to the detriment of Otis, because that group is a group of nothing. And while Otis is something and will give them something to do, how long will that last? I don't know. And then Chad Gable's all alone again. And while I know Triple H likes Chad Gable, I know other people in the past have not cared for him as much, even though the guy can go. So I hope he doesn't get too lost in the show.
I've always seen Chad Gable as someone who I think is going to be a really good producer one day, a really good road agent. Like, that's who that dude is. Like, he had a career in WWE. It was solid. He made a lot of connections. He made a lot of friends. And he just eventually ends up being a booker and a road agent and a talent scout for the company. That's what he does. And there's no shame in that. It's a very lucrative deal, and it's less taxing on your body. But like that's the way I've always seen it. I've never seen that guy in the same way of, I think of a guy like Chris Masters or, you know, Meat. So, I mean.
Oh, he's way better. No. But I get it.
You're saying he's better than Meat? Come on now. What's better than Meat? The fact Everything. That. Okay. I just want to remind you that Meat was good enough to be in an angle called Billy and Chucky. He was in a tag team called Billy and Chucky that broke barriers for WWE. That's how good Meat.
All right. I'm going to just go ahead on to the next match, because we've talked entirely too much about freaking Meat tonight. The next match is the...
I love the fact that there are like three people on the internet who are going to know who I'm talking about.
Yeah. A lot of y'all are going to have to Google it. If I didn't live through it, I'd probably have to Google it too. But I know who you're talking about. And I'm done with it now. We're on to the Intercontinental Championship match.
They're going to have to Google who Chuck and Billy are as a tag team and why they're yeah. groundbreaking.
It took me a second. I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's how that all went down. We are not going to tell you these things. Google is your friend. You can do a little work.
Is Google your friend in that case?
Huh?
Is Google your friend in that case?
I mean, it'll give you the answer. Now, is that something you want? You decide. All right. Gunther, Drew McIntyre, Sheamus, Intercontinental Championship.
I think you put over Sheamus, give him his Grand Slam title, but you do it in a way that still makes both Drew and Gunther look strong.
I'd agree. Yeah, since they've been real, real heavy on Sheamus not having, this is a title Sheamus has not won. Sheamus really wants it. It makes sense to give it to him now. And if nothing else, I know these three dudes are going to like club each other to goddamn death. So it should be a fun match.
Yeah, I think they'll be able to replicate a lot of what they did at Clash of the Castle, which was really, really good and really, yeah. really physical and blew the roof off of that place. I don't know necessarily why you need to add Drew into this match, except for the fact that, you know, Drew and Sheamus were a team for a time, but also like, kind of feels like Drew needed to be on the card, and this is the way to add him to the card.
That's exactly what it was.
Because really, this should be the end of the trilogy between Sheamus and Gunther.
Yeah, I think what they were going, I thought they were just going to do Drew and Gunther straight up. I think the whole adding Sheamus thing and then realizing what they had with the Sheamus thing is how he got added. So, yeah. Good hard-hitting match if you like that kind of stuff.
I still think Brock versus Gunther is a thing that should happen.
I do too, but apparently not a lot of people think that. Well, not a lot of people that make decisions anyway.
Well, apparently Brock doesn't think that. And if Brock isn't open to it, it doesn't get done.
Yeah, that works. That's how that works. All right, next match is the Hell in a Cell. It's going to be presumably Brood Edge versus confirmed the demon Finn Balor.
Chad, Adam Copeland gave an interview in which he said he has some stupid, crazy ideas for this match. That man is old. That man has gray in his beard, about as much as I have and you have. Like,
oh no, he got us beat.
What kind of crazy, stupid ideas can this man be having inside the cell? And bear in mind, no one ever goes to the top of the cell anymore. They all just stay inside the cell, even though they're, you know, parts for you to climb now. They've actually cut out things.
Okay, so the first thing I have to say is that let me see. Edge has got to be like over 50. We're going to see how old Adam Copeland is before I go to my thought. So Adam Copeland is 49. He will be 50 this year. Just to make sure I'm up on it, I am pretty sure Finn Balor and I are the same age. Yes, we are. He will be 42 in July. So I bring up these two gentlemen's age and say, there ain't no be jumping off the top of this goddamn cage thing. While Finn Balor looks incredible, he looks probably like 10 years younger than he is. He's still 40 freaking 2 years old, and he's been wrestling since he was like 17. Boy's got a lot of miles on his body. Edge is 50. He's got a lot of miles on his body. There ain't no going off the cage for none of this. Now, with that said, they're both bringing in their spooky, demonic other half. So, yeah, there's going to be some wild, crazy, like, bloodbaths and other kind of stupid crap that's going to happen in this match. There might be, you know, if you know anything about Edge, you might see a vampire or two that show up in this match. I don't know what other kind of spooky shit Finn can do, but that, I think we'll get that kind of stuff, like the spooky, not supernatural, but, you know, in that kind of realm, and not even in the wrestling sense, because in the wrestling sense, it can get wild. I think we'll get it in the what can practically be applied kind of wrestling sense. But there's none of this, like, falling off cages and stuff. There'll probably be ladders. There'll probably be tables. There'll be some other gimmicks. I really think there'll be some kind of fake blood thing going on, some tacks maybe. Maybe some fire at some point. Actually, yes, I'd almost guarantee there's fire at some point. So yeah, we're gonna get everything we can in this match except people flying off the cage.
I mean, to be fair, like, that is not a thing these two bad guys are known for. You know, even in Edge's, you know, Hell in a Cell history, he's not known for going up top. There are very few people who are nuts enough to go up top and come back down.
I mean, the man is 50, and I mean, granted, he had to quit for a while, and Finn is 42, but you don't get to be those ages in this business by being the ones to go off the cage a whole host of times.
Well, in Taker's defense, Taker never went off the cell. He just threw people off it.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is why he was there and they were not. None of them people that he threw off the cage lasted nowhere near as long as Taker did. Whereas Taker is, you know, he throws people off and he could just look and be like, yeah, sucks to be y'all. I'm going to go ahead and climb down this cage on the other side. Cool. That's another 10 years of my career.
That still is one of my favorite memories, is like them raising the cage for the EMS to come get Foley, and they don't realize that Taker's still standing on the top of the cell, and there's Taker getting ready to be smushed by the scoreboard.
Yeah, stop it, you sons of bitches. Anyway, yeah.
I think you get tacks. I think you get tables. I think you get chairs. I think you get blood. I think you get fire. But no, I don't think that they're going to start the match on the top of the cell or anything like that.
No. Like,
I do, however, like the fact they're using Hell in a Cell as a feud ender, the way it used to be used, right? Whereas it became a pay-per-view gimmick and just used for whatever reason. Yeah. You know, that's why there's a reason they downgraded the Taker versus Big Boss Man match at WrestleMania 15 from a Hell in a Cell match to a steel cage match. Because it was a short match, and B, the cell really never came into play, and they weren't really in a feud. So yeah.
All right. Next up, we have Seth Rollins versus Logan Paul.
Oh, the good old days when people were hung from the cell.
Well, I mean, Logan Paul's a dude that I don't really like. However, he is athletically gifted to participate in wrestling in a high enough level that I'm not bothered by him being on this card. And I think he's going to have enough time to work with somebody that's really good, put on a really good match. And it's kind of to the point where we're taking off the qualifier for celebrity match. No, he's going to put on a good match because he's good enough to put on a good, to work with somebody that can put on a good match. But with that said, I hope this ends with Seth Rollins shoving his teeth down his throat. Because,
well, they did come out and he did come out and say that his contract is up after 30 after May.
Oh,
so I
that's right, because it was like a year contract.
Yeah,
I mean, cool. I mean, if he wants to do it again, he's good. He's good enough to come in these spots, have these kind of matches. People will come in to hate him. He will do well. And he can do that like once or twice a year if he wants. That, I'm cool with that.
And like you said, the key here is him and Rollins can work a program that will build that will be built around one big spot. And he will have enough time to work on that to create the one big spot and to figure out where he needs to be and figure out his bumps so that he gets there and it wows everybody. I fully expect a really good, really fast, really good paced match.
Yeah.
That ends with Seth Rollins going over. Because the man should not be made to lose another WrestleMania in a row.
No. And I mean, after that promo Monday, that promo pretty much guaranteed that Seth is winning this.
And if you add in the fact that Logan's contract's up, it looks like a WrestleMania 20 situation.
Right. Next up,
all the fun of people who will voluntarily remember that Brock Lesnar wanted to be a Minnesota Viking.
Dude got cut. I don't even think he lasted a month. Dude got cut.
Didn't even make it to training camp. They went through OTAs and they were like, "No, bro, sorry."
Yeah, go do something else. All right. So next we have what will actually open the show, the disputed greatest of all time, John Cena. Versus Austin Theory for the United States Championship.
Theory is going to have a really good time. Cena's going to help him. They're going to have good chemistry. They're going to have a good match. People are going to be sentimental. And I think that I wouldn't be surprised if John asked for this spot to open the first night of WrestleMania. Because the old saying in pro wrestling goes, you either want to be first or you want to be last. And I think he really wants an opportunity to set the bar and set the stage for WrestleMania Goes Hollywood with this match and what they're going to do story-wise. So I'm going to go with Austin Theory over John Cena in a match that is 3 to 4 stars.
Yeah, Cena's putting him over because why wouldn't he put the new kid over? My only thing from this match is, will Cena putting him over like continue to help get Theory to where they clearly want him to be? And I have no problems with Theory, but I do hear the calls of, you know, he's kind of on the generic side. I think he's a little bit better than that, but they clearly see something.
The same thing about Randy for a period of time when Randy was first starting out in the Evolution days. So
right. And Randy needed something, and maybe this is this thing that I mean, hell, Cena needed something. Cena, like he said in his promo, Cena almost got fired. Is this the thing that will push Theory over? I know Cena will go out of his way to make it be that thing, because Cena is no longer a regular roster guy. And he knows he needs to put over talent, and I know I think he'll do the job for Austin Theory. Now it's just a matter of how that translates with the fans.
And how it looks and how well the rub is given.
Right. And I am curious how Cena's going to look in this match, just because, you know, everyone tells you being in shape is different from being in ring shape. And I'm sure he's been working out behind the scenes. But as we saw when The Rock faced Cena, even when that happens, it doesn't take long to get blown up.
It's not 10 years between matches for Cena. True. That's the difference is, you know, and Cena knows the cardio it takes, you know,
Dwayne does too. I know Dwayne does too. But while it has been 10 years, and yes, Cena did wrestle in December, let's not forget that him wrestling in December was him getting tagged in, doing three moves, and getting the hell out of Dodge.
Something very similar to what Dwayne did the Survivor Series before the Royal Rumble.
Right. So Cena's last real match has been over a year ago. He should still be better, but I'm just curious to see how it looks.
And, you know, he sells tickets and moves merch, so more power to him. And like I said, he should open the night with a statement.
All right. Next match. Becky Lynch and Lita and Trish Stratus versus Damage Control.
Is Damage Control going to blow up and fall apart? Or is Trish going to turn on Lita and Becky and cost them the championship?
And there it is.
There's only two ways this match can go. So it's really which one you prefer. I prefer Damage Control blowing up because I want to see Becky. I want to see Bayley go out and back to being a singles competitor. And I want those two girls to go out and be singles competitors again. And I want the division to get really good. And I'd love a triple threat match between the three of them. So I'd prefer that. But if you want to hear me, if you're going to do the Trish thing, I can hear you out. My only deal is that requires Trish to come back for at least one more pay-per-view, which would be WrestleMania Backlash, which is in May. And I really can't see her sticking around for another month.
Well, what I've heard the potential plans is for Trish to turn, but the match would be Trish and Becky, but it would be a SummerSlam. So it would be a turn here, but then a build to that at SummerSlam, which I can see happening. And I think that's a big enough match to have on SummerSlam. So that makes sense to me.
And that's going to be in Detroit, which is just south of Canada.
Canada, yeah.
So
I think that makes sense, and I think that's the way they'll go. So if that's the case, then I think Damage Control, you know, lives to fight on another day. They probably won't break up. They'll probably break up sometime this year, but it's not right now. But I think...
Yeah, they could potentially last a full year from SummerSlam to SummerSlam.
Yeah, yeah. But I think we'll get Becky and Trish out of this because I think that will be something people are interested in, and you can get to, you can fill up time getting to that SummerSlam.
Yeah, and it'll give them time, give Trish time to get into that position and get everything built, which I think would be nice.
Right. All right. Next is a match I have absolutely positively no interest in seeing, but here we are, Brock Lesnar versus Omos.
Chad, me and you both lived through WrestleMania 20. We both lived through Goldberg leaving and Brock leaving and Austin being there and the crowd turning on the match and just the absolute horribleness that was that match. This may be on that level. It won't be hijacked because, you know, the Garden only holds like 17,000 people. Whereas, you know, SoFi is going to hold over 100,000. But, like, this ain't going to be any better than that. It may actually be worse. Omos can't move. Brock doesn't want to be there. I mean, just the writing's on the wall. Please just let this be like Goldberg versus Lesnar at 33, where it's just spot, spot, spot. Everybody go home.
Yeah. To illustrate just how bad this is going to be, on Raw, they showed the confrontation between Omos and Brock, where Omos put Brock out the ring. And when they recapped it on Monday, it actually looked like Omos was competent and actually did the work and got Brock over the thing and came out looking high and mighty. However, that was a replay from when this happened like a couple of weeks ago, which I watched live, and I know Omos couldn't get him over the top rope. He was just trying to flip him over the top rope. He could not do it. It took him like three attempts from to finally get there. So the only reason it looked good on Monday night is because we had the magic of editing. They took the first shot of Brock gets ropes, shot of Omos running towards him, and then they cut to a back shot where Brock is flipping over, and it made it look good. So I say all that to say, the only time when they've gotten physical that Omos has looked good against Brock Lesnar happened when they were able to edit it and piece it together, which you can't do on a live show. So this is, I hope it's quick. Hope it's easy. I think Omos is going to get a little bit of heat on Lesnar, and then Lesnar's going to do what he does. And especially after MVP said that Lesnar can't suplex him and can't F5 him, the big spots in this match are going to be Lesnar suplexing and F5 him and then beating him. I think that's how this goes. Hopefully it's no longer than 4 minutes.
Is this it for Brock?
I think it is for a while. I don't think you say never, especially because Brock likes cashing those checks.
Right, but is it gone for a year? Is it gone to SummerSlam? You know, what is gone mean? I mean, if you're running around the backstage area telling people bye, I mean, that seems more like a 2-year hiatus than it does like, I'll see you in August.
I think he needs to be gone for at least a year. I don't think he should come back for SummerSlam. But Brock's getting up there in age too, so like if he's gonna go and you hold him out for like a year, then I would have in my mind that when he comes back, that's probably his last run.
Indeed. And well, I mean, we do know Goldberg wants a retirement match, so
yeah, screw that. Anyway, now we have 3 matches left remaining, all championship matches. So first up,
Bianca Belair. I'm pretty sure that if you call Bret Hart and give him a baseball bat, he'd be more than happy to retire Goldberg.
Yeah, he's going to bash in his knees and then like tie him up and like smash him with the bat across his like midsection for like a month straight and then let him leave. I'm not going to kill him, but that's what's going to happen. All right. So Bianca Belair versus Asuka for the Raw Women's Championship.
My thought is that you put Asuka over, a returning Asuka over, and give her redemption for what happened to WrestleMania 30. WrestleMania 34.
I don't really. So to me, it doesn't matter who goes over in this match. I think you can make arguments either way. I think it's close to time for Bianca to lose. Because she's had the title for almost a year. She's done well with the serious challenges she's had. It's just there's been a lack challenger. So, you know, people kind of forget that she is champion because she's held it so long. It's just kind of like the known thing. So her losing is like the shakeup she needs. And Asuka is, they're pushing Asuka's a little bit more manic, but they like, overall, they fully acknowledged like she was considered the most dangerous woman in the WWE for a long time, especially during her streak. So it could be.
And she made it, she main evented a pay-per-view with Charlotte and Flair and Ron and Becky Lynch. When both were the hottest thing in wrestling.
Right.
And it went over.
Right. But my only thing with both of them is, like, who's next? Like, if it's, I don't know who's next for either one. And I think that's really my problem with this match. It's not so much them, but what comes next. So, I mean, I will say that Bianca wins and that they hopefully set up someone new as a challenger to actually beat her. But if Asuka wins, I'm not upset. I love Asuka.
I'd like to see her get a good run.
Yeah, I think she's got a few left in her, even though Asuka is like Finn Balor. We're all the same age. So Asuka's going to be 42 this year, I believe, too. She doesn't look it. So, you know, there's that. All right. Next up is the SmackDown Women's Championship with Charlotte Flair and Rhea Ripley. And there's only one answer to who wins this match.
Yes, there is. If Liv Morgan is my 1A, Rhea Ripley is my 1B. And this will be her second women's championship run, and it will push her even further into the stratosphere. Charlotte will give her a good rub. That'll make her look really good. And, you know, Charlotte doesn't care at this point. To me, the worst thing you could do is put Charlotte over at this point, because it's like it does absolutely nothing for Charlotte Flair. Nope. Matter of fact, we're at the point in Charlotte Flair's career where people are like, should she go off to another promotion and do the Mercedes Malone thing and prove to the world that she's better and she doesn't just getting favorable treatment from WWE because of who her dad is? So, you know, it does no good for Charlotte to go over. Does that mean they won't put Charlotte over? No. But with this new regime, I don't think that they would put Rhea in this position just to pull the rug out from Rhea. As you said, as you said in our Rumble recap, you know, sometimes chalk is good.
Mm-hmm. Chalk has to be good with this one because it is Rhea's time. Rhea needs to be the champion. Rhea needs to be the top dog of one of the women's divisions. And it has to come at the expense of Charlotte Flair. But I know that is fine. Charlotte is at that point where she can do the job and be fine. My biggest fear coming out of this match is that because Rhea will win this match. And because they, it's kind of like the open secret that Charlotte's going to get to the number that her dad has. So she keeps dropping belts and winning them. My biggest fear is that she loses to Rhea. And then whenever they go to the little shakeup, which I think they're going to do soonish, she goes over to Raw and beats whoever the champion is there. And we're still back with Charlotte Flair being on top, one of the brands.
And I don't think that's going to happen because I think they're going to want a diversity and they're going to want to build some other names. I mean, hence the reason why Becky didn't have the year in 2022 that you would have thought she would have had. I think that especially with the new guy in charge, especially with a lot of the NXT talent that has to come up, I think we're going to move. I don't doubt that she'll win multiple more women's championships. It's just she's won so many in such a, you know, considerably short period of time. It's just they need to take a break from her for a hot minute.
Yes, they do. All right, and
but that still won't prevent her from giving the rub.
No. I think she's fine with giving the rub. I know at one point she wanted to give the rub to Bianca, but they wouldn't let her. But you know, we're here now, and I think it's Rhea's time. And now we're to the main event: Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes for the WWE Undisputed Universal Championship.
Explain to me your booking on this, because we both have the same outcome. How do you get there?
With what they've been building up and the implosion of the bloodline, I think, so you can go, in my mind, you can go one of two ways. The most obvious way is that the Usos come down and Jay directly puts, like, Sammy's been saying, you wanted to be the one to hit Roman. You wanted to be the one to hit Roman. Jay comes down and in that moment, in a moment where Jay can help Roman beat Cody with the chair, Jay takes the chair to Roman, aiming Cody takes advantage and pins Roman. I think that's the way they go because of how the chair spot has gone in the last few big matches with when they did it when Sammy turned the first time, like Roman making Sammy take the chair and playing that up. And then when it came to the next time with Jay and Sammy and Roman giving Jay the chair, making him do it, and he still didn't do it. I think they've been playing with that same image of Roman giving somebody the chair and turning his back on them because he's so confident and trusting that they're going to carry out his will. I think they still play with that image again, and this time Jay delivers and Roman loses. I think if you wanted to swerve that a little bit, since Jimmy has been the faithful stalwart through all of this since he joined, if you wanted to be him to be the one to give the striking blow, you could do that to kind of swerve. But I think the way they've been building it, the payoffs they've been doing, I think the big payoff is to have it be Jay be the one to directly lead to Roman's downfall.
I nominate the following scenario. They're in a close, tight match. It's struggle either way, classic ref bump, and then all of a sudden some music hits. And it is the music that tells people, do you smell what The Rock is cooking? And Dwayne cost the head of the table the championship. And the next night on Raw, Roman calls out Rock for costing him the championship and being the head of the table. And that sets up a nice little match, not in Philadelphia, but in Detroit at the biggest party of the summer, a match at SummerSlam, the WrestleMania of the summer. And now Roman has lost his championship. Cody's gotten the rub, and we're getting Rock versus Roman. It just won't be at a Mania. And it gives Rock enough time to prepare because he doesn't have a movie right. And it gives WWE time to promote it.
I can see that. I mean, if it is the WrestleMania Hollywood, they've been trying to get this match to happen for a while. This would be Dwayne confirming that he has the time to give us this match, probably his last match. So for all of those reasons, I get what you're saying, and it fits, and it can still fit in the stories they're trying to tell. But I think for like just the storytelling aspect, the stories they've been telling, I think Jay doing it has more story-wise resonance, but The Rock doing it is just going to make it a bigger overall. So I get it.
The pop that is going to come either way is going to be huge, but the idea of people being so hyper-focused on this night and on this moment and everybody expecting something to happen, and for that to happen, for that music to hit in that building at that moment, like that's a WrestleMania moment for the ages.
Yeah, I will agree.
And the thing is, SummerSlam makes sense because it gives Rock time, it gives Roman time, and you can build the match, over the course of months, and they can both get in, and Rock can get in shape, and they can advertise the hell out of it.
Right.
I mean, imagine if you're coming out and you got Becky Lynch versus Trish Stratus and Rock versus Roman on the same card. That'll move some tickets for the Ford Field.
Right.
But in the end, I think you are right. I think we get the ending of the Bloodline saga. Which concludes with Roman going away for a hot minute.
I think whenever Roman goes away, I think that's it as him as a full-time guy. But I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
See, I think he has to go away to get the rebirth.
Yeah, you're right. So, but even then, it won't be like a year ago. Like, if he goes away for longer than like 6 months, he ain't never come back. But I do think you're right. He's on the verge. He's at that spot where he's so over as a heel. Him leaving, coming back automatically makes him like the biggest babyface. So maybe the Bloodline saga continues on through SummerSlam, in which point they end him for whatever. Maybe he comes back at the Royal Rumble or Mania next year to be a face to finish out whatever run he has left in him in that way.
It'll be interesting. I mean, the one thing we all know is it's going to be a very magical moment, and that there will be a title redesign on Raw the next night.
Yeah, that's what we keep hearing, which they still haven't said if it's the title redesign is going to be a unified title or if they're going to split the titles on the different shows again. I hope it's just a unified title. I'd much rather a unified champion that goes wherever he wants as opposed to the two single show titles.
And see, I'm more of a fan of the double eagle, not the single eagle. So
for the belt, I would rather we have an eagle style. I mean, you can't see it, but on my wall, I have the wing eagle, the Austin wing eagle, not the Shawn Michaels winged eagle.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. He wants to make it the Shawn single wing, and the Attitude Era belt is the double wing. But the single wing is more synonymous with his father's era, which is that Hogan era of
the one that tripped. This is the one that trips held. The double eagle is the one that trips held the longest. I would want it to be something more like that.
That's the Attitude Era belt. That is the Attitude Era belt, except for the Smoking Skull belt, which you can still buy for $599.
Oh boy, I'm glad I got this belt when I did, because it is, well, it was quite expensive when I bought it. It's nowhere near that. I had this belt. This is when they first started releasing belts. This is the first one they ever, like, replica belt they sold. So it was from that 17 years. So it was over 20 years now.
Yeah, WrestleMania 17 was a long time ago. But that belt is the Attitude Era belt, and that's the belt of my youth, and that's the belt that I will always be partial to, along with the Smoking Skull belt, which if you pay $599 for it, it should smell like the Michigan River. I'm just ready for The Rock to do another funeral for somebody again. I hope that he gets into a feud with Roman and just holds another funeral for Roman.
He's pretty good at those.
Yeah, so unless they end with his car being run over by a monster truck.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, Chad, that'll about do it for our WrestleMania preview. We will be back with our night one, night two recaps. Our good friend and show producer, Grant L. Fletcher, will have a whole bunch of fun with us this week. but we'll be pumping out the content as much as he can provide it, and we will look forward to talking to you about the memories that are made on WrestleMania weekend. Take care, everybody, and we will talk to you soon.